Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 110 of Season 7 of Movie Real Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Matthew Simpson of Awesome Friday. Welcome, and it's Friday, so why not Awesome Friday? Welcome back, Matthew.
What is the greatest of all days? And I'm happy to be here for the whole weekend. Happy to be here today.
I'm glad you are. I'm glad you are too. So, minute 110 begins with John needing to spit, and ends with John questioning why Zeus thinks what's happening is funny. So, basically. This is a great minute also, because there's so much dialogue between the two of them. We talked a little bit yesterday about their interactions and stuff like that, and once again they're giving us a great way to even this late in the movie to see the chemistry between Zeus and John. Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson, which to me. You know, as much as I love the connection between Al and John, which is needed in the first movie, this connection is the best connection throughout the entire series. You know, throughout all five movies, there's no better connection between the one between John and Zeus here.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. To the point where I think I said before that, like, I was actually very disappointed in. The fourth and fifth movies of this franchise that we never saw him again. I would love to have seen him to see their connection continue. It's not quite apparent just yet. There's about 20 more minutes to go in the film, but they are friends by the end. And I would have liked to have seen at least a cameo, you know, like something.
Okay. I agree with you on that, but I mean, I like their connection, but I don't know if it would have worked well. The same way that you know, having that little insert scene of Al in the second one isn't as satisfying. You know, if you either want them to be fully there or not there at all. You know, even there's even a cut of number five that has Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Lucy. But I think in most versions, it doesn't appear even. Again, it just feels like it's something that is not needed. You know, so would it have been nice to see what's going on with Zeus? Yes. Would it have been nice to have him as being an integral part of the movie? No, because it would have taken away from, in my opinion, would have taken away from what the story was all about. I mean, we mentioned a little bit earlier in the week about, you know, the fact that this was originally a script called Simon Says, and then the original idea was to make it part of the Lethal Weapon series, not even make it part of the Die Hard series. And my opinion on that is that wouldn't have worked as well because, you know, Lethal Weapon, the characters already know each other. The reason that it works well here is because John and Zeus do not know each other. And they have differing opinions and stuff like that. Like, I don't know if Riggs and Murtaugh would have worked as well in these type of situations.
I think they definitely wouldn't have. I think you're right. I think this whole script is about two people, you know, meeting and growing together. I think you're right. If it had been two people who already know each other, it would not have worked as well.
Yeah.
Unless it was like, if they did a Lethal Weapon movie now, you know, like, I guess it's been probably like 20 years since the last one. You could maybe make a case for it being like them being estranged and having to become friends again might have worked. But in the moment, no, that would have been terrible. It wouldn't have worked as well.
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, that's why, you know, I'm as I said, I love the interactions between the two of them, but I don't think... You know, there are a lot of times in where something works in a movie and they decide to make a sequel or a trilogy or whatever it is, and you feel that it's more of the same thing, but it's just not as as clear cut as it was in the first time you did it, you know, that type of thing. Again, I'm glad that they stayed away from it. It's possible that one of the reasons they stayed away from it was because Samuel L. Jackson became more of a Hollywood figure, you know, around the time that this movie came out. So therefore, it might not have been as easy to get him to do something, you know, to do another Die Hard movie. I mean, I know that he and Bruce Willis worked again together, you know, 4 years, 5 years later in Unbreakable. But I think you needed a really good script in order to get them to work together again. And, you know, to do something that would be rehashing the type of stuff that they do here, I don't know if that would have necessarily been as appealing to him at the time. I mean, I don't know. Just my guess.
Yeah, I think you're probably onto something there. I think this was one of his, Jackson in particular's, sort of first films after his big break in Pulp Fiction, which would have been the year before, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 94.
He famously worked like a madman through the 1990s. But it's hard to imagine, you know, him not costing a whole lot more in whatever the next one would have been.
Right. Correct.
And, you know, my favorite of the films he's been in, which we talked about the other day, was The Long Kiss Goodnight, which he co-leads with Gina Davis. But, you know, by 2 or 3 years later, he's also like a solidly like leading man in films. And maybe he didn't want to do these supporting sort of buddy roles anymore.
Could be. But again, it goes back to the whole idea of been there, done that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, most actors are trying to look for something new to do.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to be typecast. They don't want to be doing the same thing over and over. You know, they want to be able to show their range and all that stuff. So I can see it from that perspective. But again, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, you know, like, I don't know how it came to be that he and Bruce Willis worked together on Unbreakable. It's possible that because Bruce Willis had done The Sixth Sense, he's like, wow, you know, this is a great director. This is, you know, M. Night is the new thing. So, you know, maybe he called up Samuel L. Jackson and said, look, I'm doing another M. Night movie, and this is a great one, and it has a great role for you. You know, and Samuel Jackson, hey, look, Purple. I like Purple. Okay, I'll do it. You know, that type of thing. It's possible. It's not probable, but it's possible. You know. So basically, yesterday, John pulled a very large splinter out of his arm and was getting ready to pass it off to the electrician / locksmith Zeus. And, you know, they started counting, and this minute begins with them saying, spit it. And then John goes, yeah, you get it. Come on, come on, come on. Move your hands. All right. Okay. Damn, John. You know, I was just starting to like you. He goes, well, don't. I'm an asshole. What are you talking about to you? He goes, I lied to you, Zeus. About what? Remember I said Weiss found the bomb in Harlem? Yeah. They actually found it down in Chinatown. Oh, now that's low, even for a white motherfucker like you. Because I told you I was an asshole. And then, right in the middle of it, we hear like this little sound, which is maybe like a foghorn or something like that. And then he goes, what the fuck was that? And he goes, I don't know. Now, I have no idea what that is or why it's there. You know, it's not signaling. I don't know what it's supposed to be signaling. Is it supposed to be signaling that the Coast Guard is getting closer? I don't know.
Oh, you know what I think it is? Isn't it the sound of the, like, it's not a foghorn, it's too high pitched. I think it's just the sound of the bomb priming beneath them. Of the, like, the mechanism starting to mix, isn't it?
No, it doesn't start mixing yet. That we're only going to get next week where it mixes.
I mean, it's definitely a shipboard sound, though.
Right.
Like, it's not external to the ship. It sounds like a pressure valve of some kind being released. Or my initial thought was, like, the not so much sorry not the like liquids mixing, but like the electronics on the bomb, like doing like putting out an alert for some reason, like the countdown starting or the pump spinning up to mix the liquid, something like that. Either way,
again, it's possible, but we only see next week. We'll only see the beginning of next week that the mixture starts coming together. So I don't know.
Yeah. Either way, it's a shipboard sound, like it's a local sound to them. I don't think it's external.
Right. But what's funny is that it takes them out of sync of what they're doing right now.
I mean, there's a possibility.
You know, like they're in the middle of this somewhat deeper conversation where John is confessing that he lied to him. You know, and then, oh well, you know, what was that sound? You know, that type of thing.
I mean, the other possibility is just that, like, it was a sound that happened on set while they were in mid-scene, and they just had to ram with it, you know? That's possible, too.
Correct.
Which would honestly be, I think, in some ways, kind of better. That would be a great little story to be able to tell about, you know, shooting that scene.
Yeah. And we were shooting it, and we just heard something there. What? Huh? Yeah, that would have been. No clue. John says, well, it was the only way I can get you to come with me. He goes, uh-huh. He goes, you got a wife, McLean? Yeah. I'm surprised anybody stayed with you long enough to be married. Well, she didn't stick around too long. We're sort of separated. What the f*** is sort of separated? Well, she was in L.A. I was in New York. Had a fight on the phone. She hung up. I didn't call her back. How long was that? How long ago was that? About a year ago now. About a year. And then he just starts laughing. Because Zeus is basically saying, I already know who this John McClane is. And then John goes, what the f*** are you laughing about? So, again, I like the chemistry and the conversation between the two of them. The way that this plays out. It's just great. You know, it flows. But at the same time, they're also giving us this information about Holly. Which is something that they like doing in Die Hard movies. Because, you know, that's what, you know, we got that in the conversation with Argyle in the first movie. We got that with John complaining to Robert Constanza in you know, when his car's getting towed, and here we get it here. You know, John likes to explain his situation in, you know, to a character while at the same time explaining it to us. So I like the way they did that.
Yeah, it's also just a nice moment because, like, by this time, they're on their way to just being friends. Like, I think we talked about a little bit yesterday. There's a level of, like, a bond, a level of trust between them, which is, you know, pretty great, actually. And everything we talked about with the way this whole sequence is shot is just a carryover from yesterday as well. It's wonderfully put together, like, just on a basic filmmaking perspective.
Yeah.
And I love all of it.
Right. And it also works really well because this entire minute, we basically have Zeus trying to pick the lock. You know, mm-hmm. so while Zeus is doing that, they're having this conversation to also sort of distract us from having to watch, you know, someone pick a lock. You know, because they don't even show his hands most of the time. They show just the two of them back to back as Zeus is doing this more or less, you know, blindfolded, you know, behind him.
Yeah, and it's a nice...
So I like the way that they present that.
And the continuous nature of the way it's shot also, you know, makes it clear that picking that lock is taking a few moments as well. Like, this whole thing, I think I said yesterday, this whole sequence is very patient in a way that a more modern film probably wouldn't be, which I think is great.
Correct. Again, because as we know, movies nowadays have less patience. Or, sorry, moviegoers have less patience. So therefore, the movies do what they can to move the pace up so that people won't, you know, they won't get too bored. But again, this isn't the type of scene that I think is something that would get people bored. Because the whole idea is that, you know, if we're just watching them pick the lock, then maybe. But this is adding more information about the characters, which is sort of needed at this point. Because, you know, it makes you wonder why it takes 110 minutes for us to basically ask the question as to where is Holly. They've alluded to it beforehand. You know, we had basically, you know, Cobb mentions it twice, once to John and once to Simon, you know, about that his marriage is pretty much over. But we don't get it from John's perspective. So I like the way that they do that here.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it too. And like, I like all of that. I think Holly being absent in this movie is kind of glaring is probably too strong a word, but it's definitely a thing, right? And this conversation rectifies that a little bit, even if it makes, you know, it does make John out to look like an asshole. So, but he's our asshole. So
that's right. But I think that's all part of, you know, the idea. Again, it's funny that John is confessing to Zeus here, because most of the time in movies, characters will only confess when they believe they're about to die. John doesn't believe he's about to die at this point.
No, I mean, they're about.
What incentive does he have to tell Zeus the truth at this point?
I mean, just that they're friends. You know, they've built the bond. It's present at this point. So but I like that. I like. I mean, they're not fully friends, I think, until the very end. But this is the moment where the turn is made, right? And from them being just like
okay.
dudes who were thrust together to being like actually friends. This is the scene where that turn happens.
Okay. All right. I can see that where they're starting to, but Zeus isn't giving him any information. I mean, we talked about this in the script probably a few months ago, where Zeus also mentions that he's divorced and, you know, stuff like that. And then when he asked John the same question, John basically tells him it's none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I guess from that perspective shows growth to John, you know, that here, you know, when the two of them were having a conversation on the way to the elephant park, Zeus was open, but John wasn't. And here John is finally being open about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's part of the, you know, the growth of the character.
Yeah. And
through the course
of their growth together too.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I can buy that. All right, the truth is, I don't have anything else to say about this minute. You know, it's a solid bonding minute.
I don't really have anything else to say either. I mean, everything I would say about this minute is stuff that I said about yesterday's minute, because it's a very clear
right.
continuation thereof. Yeah, well shot, well performed, solid minute of the movie.
Right. Now, I don't know the answer to this, but the beam that's between the two of them, it looks like something is scratched on it, but it's really, you can't read what it says. But do you think that that's just scratches, or is that really meant to be some sort of code that someone added in there?
Oh, so the pipe they're tied to?
Yeah.
It says it's a piece of metal pipe, and it's in a pipe description. It says made in USA, and it details the gauge of pipe, I believe.
Really?
I think so, yeah. It definitely says made in USA. I'm looking at the frame right now. But I think it's just like describing, it's like a manufacturer stamp.
Oh, okay. Now I see the made in the USA in the middle. And I was looking at it from beforehand. Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, like when you look at, I don't know if you ever, like, you know, we've had a lot of construction in Vancouver over the past couple of years, so, you know, you see the pipes out there, things like that out in construction sites, and there's always, like, a manufacturer stamp that details, like, who made it, where it came from, the gauge, that kind of stuff. I think that's just those marks.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think the last okay. line there says it's, like, 4-inch pipe, I think. It's a material, and then 4-inch, I think, is what it says. It is a little scratched up. That's what I believe that is.
I thought it was just like some sort of code that someone in the production, you know, put there. I guess not.
That would be cool.
Unless they're talking about the fact that the movie is made in the U.S., you know.
I mean, maybe. That would be cool, but I don't think it's the case in this instance.
No, Not in this case. Okay. All right. Well, once again, we have nothing to talk about in the script because this is not in the script. But every Friday, we have a segment called Name That Movie. So as we discussed earlier today, and we've discussed it many times over the course of this entire season, this movie was originally called Simon Says. Mm-hmm. So the idea behind this segment is I went and, you know, there are so many movies that had different titles before they were eventually released. So the idea is that I went and made a list of over 150 movies and their original titles, not the release title. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to play a little game. I'm going to give you an original title of a movie, including its the year that it came out. And you have to try and guess what the movie is, what the release title of the movie is or was. Okay.
All right.
Some of them are fake titles that they use during production. One of the five that I've chosen for you actually is that. You have lifelines. You can ask for the director. You can ask for some of the actors. You know, and the important thing is to have fun.
All right. I'm excited. This sounds like a fun game, actually.
Okay. Great. All right. So we will start with the first one from 2017. This is a fake production title called Space Bear.
Space Bear, 2017. Yes. How many lifelines do I have?
As many as you want.
Okay. Space Bear. Who's the director of this film?
Oh, come on. If I give you the director, you're going to get it in a second.
Okay. Who? Give me one of the actors.
Domhnall Gleeson.
Oh. Last Jedi?
Yes. Come on, if I would have told you Rian Johnson, you would have gotten it right away.
I would have, that's true, yeah. That's, yeah, I definitely would have, yeah.
Exactly, okay. All right, the next one, from 2016, The Story of Your Life.
The Story of Your Life, 2016, Story of Your Life. This is not ringing any bells for me.
Okay.
Who's in the movie?
Okay. Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker. In a movie in 2016. Arrival?
Yes. Very good. Okay. From 1988. Twins. Now, again, there is the movie Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito that also came out in 1988. But it's not that movie. This is a different movie that was originally called Twins. From 1988
movie called Twins. I have no idea who is in this movie. Just one person who's in this movie.
Genevieve Bujold.
Genevieve Bujold. Is this a French film?
No.
Genevieve Bujold. I can't even picture that person's face.
Okay, it was directed by David Cronenberg.
Oh, that's Dead Ringers, right?
Yes, it is. Very good. It's interesting that was called Twins. I wonder if they changed it because of, you know, the fact that, you know, that the Schwarzenegger movie came out at the same time.
Yeah, I actually thought the Schwarzenegger DeVito movie was later. I didn't realize it was. In my head, it's like an early 90s movie, not a late 80s movie, you know?
Right. Actually, okay, I just looked it up. The movie was this movie was originally called Gemini, and then the studio didn't like it, so they switched to Twins. And then they changed it to Dead Ringers because Ivan Reitman, who had produced two of Cronenberg's earlier films, approached Cronenberg and asked him to use the title Twins for the movie that he was making with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That makes sense.
So, okay. Yeah, exactly. All right. Next one. From 2004, An Ordinary Man.
2004, An Ordinary Man. This is a lot harder than I thought it would be, to be totally honest. Who's in this movie?
One of the supporting characters is played by Nick Nolte.
Ordinary Man. Nick Nolte. 2004. I'm going to need something else, like a director or another person.
directed by Terry George. That probably doesn't help either.
No, not at all. you give me another person who's in it?
I'm trying to think if there's someone here that you... Joaquin Phoenix is in it.
2004. I'm going to feel really dumb when you tell me what this is.
I know that if I give you, if I give you the lead actor, you're going to get it right away. So another supporting actor was Jean Reno.
Nope, I think you're stopping me on this one. I feel like
okay. Sophie Okonedo.
Does this movie have Don Cheadle in it?
Yes, it does.
So it's Hotel Rwanda, right?
Exactly. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. I didn't say these were going to be easy.
I think that was one of the first movies that Sophie Okonedo was, like, a thing in, right? Like, that was one of her big break movies, if memory
serves. Yeah, for sure. All right, and the final one that I have for you from 1988, Batteries Not Included.
Isn't there a movie from 1988 called Batteries Not Included, though? Or around there?
No, it was from 1987. But, you know, that was a Spielberg movie about aliens, about alien robots and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's not the one we're talking about here, though.
Batteries Not Included, 1988. It's too late to be a Child's Play movie. It's not the actual Batteries Not Included. Who else is in this? Who is in this? Is anyone in this that I would know?
Brad Dourif.
Brad Dourif. Wait, is it a Child's Play movie?
Yes.
Is it Child's Play? I thought Child's Play was much earlier in the '80s than that.
Child's Play was 88. Oh. This is Child's Play.
I thought it was like
82. Yeah, I had to stifle my laugh after you. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I thought it was much earlier in the 1980s. Weird.
Nope.
I mean, that would have been a great title. To be fair,
maybe they didn't use it because of the other movie, Batteries Not Included.
I mean, yeah, that rings true.
Right. That's why they changed it. They changed it because Steven Spielberg was making another movie by that same name. There you go. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of disappointing that the two movies here, which have other titles that were used for other blockbuster movies, they changed them because they didn't want to, because basically they didn't want to go up against bigger names, I guess.
Which, I mean, makes sense. You don't want to have too many things coming out with the same name at the same time.
True. True. All right. Excellent. Great job. You see, you got all five of them.
I didn't
Even if some of them took a little longer, which is fine.
Didn't expect to, but happy that it did.
Yeah, very good. All right, Matthew, would you like to one final time this season tell people where they can find Matthew Simpson?
Absolutely. The easiest way to find most of my work, I write for a number of publications, and the easiest way to find that work is to check out my portfolio page, which is stretched.ca. I'm also the co-founder and host of the Awesome Friday podcast, which you can find anywhere you can find podcasts, and we review two new movies every week on the show. And last but not least, if you want to reach out to me on the socials, I am at SmatthewAF on Threads and Instagram and Twitter, and those are in descending order the places you can usually find me on social.
Okay. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moveaboutminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moveaboutminute@movierob.net. Matthew, thank you very much for joining me this week. This was a great discussion. I really enjoyed it. I hope you did too.
I did. It's been a pleasure. This is the third time I've been on the show, the third week I've spent on your show, and it's been a pleasure each time, and this time was no exception.
All right, and I hope you'll come back next season also.
Yeah. I look forward to it.
Excellent. All right. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.